We're talking about signs and places, and what was the last thing you guys heard before it went blip?
Gemini's Entertainment District.
Oh yeah, it's the entertainment. And in the ancient days, it was where the brothels and the gambling houses are. You know, Mercury. So Gemini rules the casinos, and everything that goes with casinos. And, but it's also just that living more town space. And then when we got Aquarius is that place where the water's kept, but why do you need to keep water? Why do they make dams? They make dams for people who live in the cities, right? So it's that place just above the town where they're holding the water and all the houses are being built around them. And in the ancient days, have you ever seen the you know, like now we have these plastic containers that people put water in, but like in the ancient days they were these stepped kind of like ponds that they'd fill up when it would rain, and they would slowly, as they use it, would go down, and the steps would stay there, and people would go down. So they were the water. They call them tanks, even though they're more like ponds, but they're ponds with steps. So that was the Aquarius part of town. And it was always nice to be in that neighborhood. And then what we got? So we got those signs, and then that's all. Yeah, you get everything.
For freedom, can I ask?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, I guess we did.
Go.
Where would the compost be?
Tell me, where would the compost be?
I think it would be Capricorn.
Why Capricorn?
Because it's movable Earth, so it's changing. Or maybe like Scorpio, or I don't know.
Yeah,
something,
yeah. Why Scorpio?
It's fixed. It's things that are dying.
It's rotting.
And transformation.
I don't know.
It's
transformation.
It's rotting. It's transforming.
It's in decay into something fertile for rebirth. I would say Scorpio too. I think.
Yeah, I would agree with Scorpio. And that's not that you won't find that in any text, but I, just signification wise, I would associate it with Scorpio.
I thought it was. I'm not debating, but I thought it would be Taurus.
Earth
just becoming Earth.
But it's not Earth.
In like a very natural way.
But it's not what? Earth. It's not Earth. It's trash. It's waste.
But it's basic. But elementally, it is Earth.
When it's all done, it becomes Earth.
No, but I mean, on an elemental level, it's Earth.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, if you came and looked at my compost pile, you wouldn't want to sit in it or plant anything in it or pick it up and grab it. If I take you to a nice part of my garden, you'd pick up that dirt and you can smell it, and it's some good fertile soil, you know.
Well, because it's in a process, but
but that's the thing. While it's in the process.
It's decomposing. Okay, yeah. I get it.
And
it's toxic in that state.
It's toxic and it's in a transformation, just like Perul said. Mm-hmm. She kind of hit it on the head. It's, you know, that transformation, this rotting transformational experience is completely Scorpio's ball game.
Okay.
And what lives in compost?
Worms
and bugs and
serpent
and insects, basically, you know, things that are all ruled by Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. All that is helpful to me. Yeah, thank you.
So what's it mean when your Lugna is one of these?
One of what?
One of these signs, one of these topographies. What's it mean when your Lugna's that?
Well, I was always looking at fourth house and relating it.
Well, that's the home life and where you're gonna live. But I'm saying, what's it do when it's your Lugna? Like, I'm a Gemini Lugna. What does that mean?
Where I could find you, maybe?
Nope.
No.
Something about your body? No, what your body's doing?
It's going to affect the body, but the topography. How is that affecting me as it being my Lugna?
Maybe throughout your life you will have more of a predisposition to taking risks, taking higher risks. Maybe you'd be more prone to appreciating women or beauty.
Oh, you're saying because I'm Gemini.
Or maybe more prone to be like someone who is, yeah, more into various different types of people of the opposite sex. Maybe that your whole life is spent, communicating a lot, or you have a very dynamic sort of psychology that you're interested in different things like drama or art
and you did a great
media ventures or
you did a great job or, with the, you know, with
you're
the
always
Scorpio.
Looking for something
could it just be the
give me the reasoning behind everything you're saying.
Because Gemini would be your Lugna, and if
fully,
Gemini...
Fully, but give me direct, like this because of that, like this because of that, like this because of that.
So you'd be prone to taking higher risks because Gemini rules gambling. You'd probably have multiple relationships with the opposite sex because Gemini, you know, rules various sexual partnerships. You mm-hmm. might... be into drama and arts because Gemini rules different creative outlets. If you're a Scorpio, you might be into getting to the bottom of things. Your whole life is all about seeking out alternative types of healing or transformation because Scorpio rules secrets and things that are not out in the open and transformation. So your whole life might be looking for secrets.
You're doing good. You're doing good.
Research.
You're doing good.
Is that what? Yeah.
You're doing good, except for the fact that you just said Scorpio's into secrets. So da 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 da. And who said it's in the secrets? You know, somebody said it's in the secrets. well, I'm just trying to get to the fundamental archetypal level here. You know, as he's looking at the signs, we want to get to the root archetype. And so you just said the person will do XYZ because Scorpio keeps secrets. And how do we know Scorpio keeps secrets? We don't have that. And so let's go, just stay a little more strict with the typography. Look at the typography of Scorpio. You know, water under the ground, rotting compost piles,
I think what she meant by secrets is when something's hidden, deeply hidden.
Yeah. Fully, but that's what I want to hear.
It's like, you know, not known.
But I want to hear water is hidden. Water is hidden underground, and so that's why they're secretive because there's that hiddenness. You know, what's like let's stay with the straight archetype and not get into what somebody else said about the sign. People say all kinds of things about the sign, but all I'm doing right now is I'm trying to get you to really fine tune your logic with because we're allowed to say anything we want, but we have to have a proper logic to how we say it. Like a compost pile, it doesn't say that in the scriptures anywhere, but it's rotting and it's transforming. Obviously, we're going to put it into Scorpio. It's the waste. Scorpio is the place where we go to the bathroom. That's our anus. So it's where the waste comes out of us. It's where the trash goes.
Someone with a Scorpio Lugna would take opportunities or events that happen in their lives and are able to turn them into something else. They're able to transform negative events throughout their lives. Something like that.
Yes.
Is that still
too
not by the book?
Well, no book. We're not with books. We're with archetypes right now.
But the thing is, I know a person who is a Scorpio Lugna, and she escaped. She's been addicted. She's having a very hard time focusing on recovering. She's just you know, that's, it's a weak area for her at this point. She's in her early 30s. So, I mean, I think there's so much, I don't think we can look at the Lagna and say this, because there's other things going on in the chart that might be stronger than...
There's lots of things going on in the chart, but the Lagna is going to give us a certain topography of the personality. It's going to give us a certain topography of who they are.
It doesn't sound true for the person I know, is what I'm saying.
If we do it correctly, it will.
Okay.
And no one said that Scorpios can transform anything. It's Scorpio is rotting waste. If your friend is rotting waste that's not composting properly, then it just stays rotting waste and it starts to stink.
So it doesn't mean successful transformation or the end of the resolving. It just means anything in the process, and any point of the process may show up for that Lagna person.
And any part of the process can be, you know, yes.
Okay. That makes sense. More sense.
But the big thing is she's in that process, and that becomes a big focus of her persona.
And when she does sessions, she's excellent at it. But it's rare that she does a session, you know. But when she does, she's super good at it. You know, she's super good at it, meaning working through it, dealing with it. She's very intelligent in that way.
All right. So Perul's rocking it. Let's hear you do your own Lagna, Perul, Pisces.
Oh, okay. So
go for Pisces. Place. Really, really tie every interpretation to the place. So let's go into the place of Pisces first, and then let's bring it into what it means on a personality level.
Okay. The place of Pisces.
Yeah. What is the place of Pisces?
Like the courtroom?
No, that's Sag.
Oh.
Did you miss when we were talking about Pisces as the ocean?
Yeah, I just came in. I just came in when Justin was doing...
So Pisces is the ocean. It's where there's whales and dolphins and fish, and it's all together. It's this big mix of everything. And it's also the seaside, where you're by the ocean and the smell of that salty water and the beach homes.
The
and
dual nature.
The dual nature.
Because it can be calm, but it can also be crazy.
Yeah. The ocean. When we look at the ocean, like how is that ocean, right? Like a river's always moving.
Right, and that was Cancer. The river was always moving, and Scorpio was more like a pond, more like the still water, and Pisces was more the dual nature. So there's depth and stillness, but there can also be chaos and storms happening on the surface. Okay. Right.
So give us the persona of that person, that Lagna.
The persona of that person. And there could be several things happening simultaneously within the person. There could be like dual sort of opposites or polarities, conflicts happening. There also can be this tendency to maybe not have clear boundaries in relations with other people and situations. There's also like this sort of idealism for like the being able to contain the welfare, sort of having welfare for the all, like containing the all. Is that what you're getting at, or am I?
You're good. I don't know about that last one, the containing.
Well, I'm just thinking like how the ocean contains all this life and provides for all this life.
It's
and
less about containing, so it's more about like it can all be there. It's all right. Good. It's like accepting everything. Pisces is this big like all accepting sign. And Pisces can sometimes be too all accepting of
yes.
too much.
The not knowing where one stops, like the ocean, you know, like just continuously flowing not really knowing one's boundaries.
Yeah.
Sometimes too expansive. Yeah. But also Pisces does have good discernment, but that could be also because of my Virgo. My Virgo moon that I have the discernment.
No, that's because a lot of that is Pisces. You have the Lugna Lord in Virgo, and so that's giving you the discernment.
Right. Yes, and I feel that has to do with
Virgo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In her chart.
Oh.
So are you getting how we took the place and we turned it into a personality, and we can take a personality and turn it into a place. So when we look at places, the places have personalities. We can literally anthropomorphize, is the term, a place. So you can walk into any place that you go to, you can anthropomorphize it into a personality. And vice versa, you can take a personality and turn it into a topography. You can call somebody... Ah, oh, you're so dry, like a desert, you know, without any water. We can see a personality. We can go back and forth like that. I read a word the other day. I'm still sitting with the word, contemplating it. It was called theanthropocosmic. Theanthropocosmic. And they're referring to Agni in the Vedas. The meaning like Thea, it's a god. Anthropo meaning it can take on a human form, and cosmic it's a cosmic entity. You know, it represents like this archetypal principle. So it's a god.
I love it. That's like a deity, right? It can be a deity.
It can be a human form that we can perceive, and it can be this. Yeah. So the anthropo cosmic. I was like, wow.
How do you spell the? Anthropo. Cosmic.
Yeah, like theosophy, but it becomes the anthropo.
Okay. Freedom, I have a question about this. All of this.
Yes, I was waiting for your questions.
Okay. So. I'm just interested as like the environments are deteriorating. Could you say that environmental degradation is affecting us psychologically and globally by like somehow deteriorating the integrity of the signs or changing the nature of the signs themselves?
Yes and no. Because you have some people that still live in very pristine areas. And then you have other people that live in more degraded areas.
Mm-hmm.
So in those more degraded areas, it's terrible for the psychology. It's terrible for the persona. And
so it could influence those areas of life specifically that the house falls in, that coincides with whatever area is degraded.
The area of life, you mean relative to a person's own chart?
Yeah.
Huh.
Like if the 10th house falls in, you know what I mean? Like Scorpio and they live in a polluted desert or something, you know, like a nuclear waste dump or something. Is that going to have an influence on somehow pollute the career as well? Or I guess that's what I'm along those lines.
Yeah. That's on a just pure health physical level. I haven't contemplated that level, but on a pure physical health level, it has a big impact. On a health psychological level, totally.
That would be indicated in the chart already for somebody to be living in a nuclear waste dump. There would be other indications for that.
Like the fourth house?
Afflictions to the place of home, particularly if they're living where there's excess nuclear waste, then Rahu has to be doing some issue in the fourth house. And then this is where we can, and I'm going to touch on this very, very lightly, okay? But this is where Uranus, Pluto, and Neptune, it's like, you know, there's things in the environment that weren't here pre-Uranus, Pluto, and Neptune.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
And so them showing up in the chart all of a sudden, you know, us being able to see them, was it the fact that the Earth changed and then we were able to see them, or that we saw them and then all of a sudden all this stuff changed on Earth?
No, we saw them. But we saw them, and then all of a sudden they became a part of our awareness. And
but
so
did we see them
after our lives?
Did we see
up
them?
So then they weren't a part of our awareness because we couldn't see past Saturn, so they didn't affect us.
But wasn't it due to technology that we were able to see them?
It was due to the science of spectacles, of glasses, and how you polish glasses for better seeing. And they were at first creating these glasses to be able to, like, when you were on your castle, to be able to see farther into someone else's castle so that you could see the bad guys coming sooner to be able to, like, shoot them.
Binoculars,
exactly. And then the binoculars turned into a telescope, and then the telescope found, you know, first it found craters on the moon, and then it found moons on Saturn, and then it slowly
found the rings on Saturn.
Yeah. And then Uranus in the Vedic texts, they don't mention it as a planet, but what they talk about is each planet, each realm where the planet is spinning is called a dvipa. It's an island. And the space in between the planets is called an ocean, a sagara. And so they have a name for each orbit of the planet and a name for each ocean in between that orbit. And so each one goes out, and you know, when you get to the one, and each one totally relates to the planet. And then you get to Saturn, and there's an ocean beyond Saturn, and then there's an orbit beyond Saturn, which, you know, we don't have a planet, but they call that the aloka loka. It means the realm of no realm. You know, it's like this, the realm of ghosts, or the not realm realm. And which is interesting because that's
sounds
the
Piscean to me.
Yeah, but that's the one connected with Uranus.
Because isn't that the only one that's out of the ecliptical plane, right? Isn't that the only one that has a wonky orbit that's not in sync with all the others?
No, Uranus and Neptune have a decent orbit. It's Pluto that's got the wacky orbit.
Okay.
Uranus spins sideways, though.
Which is fine. That doesn't.
Yeah.
It is sideways, right?
Yeah, but so any which
does
way.
Does Dante talk about those three planets?
Going back to Maggie's question, so you know, in that question, I would say there has to be a contemplation of these outer planets, you know. But a polluted area. Then we have Rahu. Rahu indicates a polluted area. Mars is indicating a place where things are broken. And Saturn is indicating that they're dirty. They haven't been taken care of. They haven't been managed. And this is straight from the Shastra, you know, these three planets.
Okay.
In indicating.
So
that.
Then as Rahu but as places become more polluted in general, then Rahu just gets stronger, like in the psychology of everyone.
Stronger, and so you know, and now we're philosophizing here, but And I'm just going to change it to health because that's more one of my strong point. And if we look at cancer, you know, they didn't have cancer back in the day. And so, but yet you see in multiple areas, they talk about combinations for dying from snake bite. And it has to do with Rahu and Sun. And that combination for snake bite and the yogas that create somebody dying from snake bite, who gets bit by a snake these days? But that's what shows up when people have cancer. So we've killed all the snakes, and the snakes have and the snake bite has turned into cancer.
Are you talking about the disease?
The disease, yes.
Okay. But also,
But follow the logic. So, you know, we killed all the snakes, but there's still something where there's this poison coming into somebody and causing them to die. And to have this slow, agonizing death. And so by killing the one, we killed the nature, but the element, whatever it is, that archetype, it still exists, it just comes in a different form.
Okay.
Now, I would definitely say as an environment becomes more barren, it's going to bring a more barren awareness, a more barren consciousness. But, you know, when we look at just city life in general, there's been city life for the last 5,000 years. If we look at the Indus Valley and Egypt and stuff, like, I mean, they were living in dense cities with septic systems and sewers and, you know what I mean? So there's been city consciousness. We weren't tribals running around until, you know, Jesus's time. It's like there was big major cities way before then.
Okay.
So as the whole system was developed, they were very aware of city life. And what city life did, because wherever cities ended up, they cut down the forests and eroded away the soils. And even in the Roman times, there's discussion about how they, you know, these beautiful forests, that they cut them all down and then it eroded. And then it's this like barren land that they destroyed it. In biblical times, there's discussion of like Lebanon was a beautiful forested jungly area. And they cut down all the trees and turned it into a desert. So they were being aware of environmental devastation. And so by bringing that up, that means The people who were developing this system were aware of environmental devastation happening.
Okay.
Now it's definitely happening on a much grander scale at this point in time. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to land, does K2 have any role in that? Because Rahu is kind of like those unknown, creeping, kind of toxic fear kind of energy. Is there anything where K2 comes into play?
In what way?
Like in an atmosphere.
In an atmosphere, and in a place, you
yeah,
mean?
Yes, in a place.
K2 is like a bunch of hippies trying to be natural, but not really being natural, you know? They got synthetic tie-dyed shirts on that polluted some poor little village somewhere in China, and then they're out in the woods being natural, quote, you know, with it. So that's K2.
Okay.
It's kind of slightly diluted in its nature when we get into that realm.
Detached.
It's like the REI crowd.
I don't know too much about that. All right. So yeah, we got some good archetypal stuff in with signs.
And I have a quick question, yeah. Freedom, just on K2. Like, would it be like somebody who is posing to know something but really doesn't like someone who's a charlatan, like, I don't know, a lot of people think that David Avocado Wolf is a charlatan, or this woman, the food babe who talks about nutrition, that they don't really know what they're talking about, or they don't really practice what they preach. Would that be like a K2 kind of thing?
So the thing about K2 is it goes to either extreme. We never have this like nice neutral K2. If we take Saturn, and I'll just I was talking about Saturn last night. You know, a really good strong Saturn gives somebody who's 6 foot tall, they're really broad, big. You look at their hands and they're just like huge hands. Like construction worker, they can move, you know, bulldozers, and just, you know, like they can carry big logs and put it, you know, they're just like huge strong people. That's a really good Saturn. We go to the opposite side of the spectrum with Saturn, and Saturn can give us a person who's skinny and tiny and weak and decrepit, and their teeth are rotten and they age fast. And so this is like a negative Saturn. So we get, and then you can get Saturn anywhere in between in that spectrum. Now, when we get to K2, K2 gets to be this extreme. It's either this like very spiritual, deep, wise planet, or it's a complete fraud pretending. And you know, it's a lot of work to pretend to be a fraud. To be a fraud is a lot of work. They could have done that same amount of work and actually got the real knowledge. But they're choosing to be a fraud because of the negative aspects on that K2. So K2...
They're choosing to be a fraud, or they're delusional and they think that they're real.
Nah. But the thing is, K2 is also that deep spiritual master. So when K2 is benefic and associated with Jupiter or Venus, and you know, when that K2 is beneficial, it gives a deep, real spirituality. When that K2 is weak and not well placed, then it gives and let's see, the exact sloka goes for Tapasvi Yoga, in the Navamsa, if Saturn, Venus, and Ketu are in trine to each other, it gives a Tapasvi Yoga. Somebody who's deeply spiritual and doing their practice and dedicated to knowledge and wisdom. If it's Venus and Ketu, but no Saturn, then the person is a fake in monk's clothing. You know, that Venus, they dress like a monk, but they're not a real monk. So K2 can go to either extreme.
And then again, it's the question, right? Like, do they know that they're fakers, or are they delusional? And do they really think that they're these great gurus or great,
And at the same time, I meet great educated people all the time who are like, I don't know if I'm good enough to be teaching yet.
Right.
So it goes both ways. And I'm gonna give you guys a minute. I gotta use the bathroom. Let's see. Talk a little bit more about signs, and I'll be right back.
Okay. So Perul, you seem like you've been studying a lot, and you're pretty energetic about all this.
I've been studying it all. I have been studying a lot, but not by the book.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of side study.
Yeah, me too. Summer kind of puts me in a rajasic kind of like all out in the world mode, and I'm finally mellowing out. Past month has been busy. But this is something that really interests me, is trying to understand you know, the archetypes a little more as well. And all that information is out there, like Freedom said, but it really helps to talk with you guys and kind of sort all these out.
But I've had the experience, and I agree with you, Perul, the delusional, what you were pointing out.
The Ketu, huh?
Yeah. Specifically with somebody. It's pretty... funny how something can go so far in one direction and so far in another direction. But the delusional thing was, I agree with that.
Because it's one thing to know that you're a fraud, you know, and it's another thing to think that you're the real thing. Or maybe it's the same thing, the same coin, different size, I don't know. That's, I think, what Freedom was trying to say.
I'm back.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but this is why we look to the yogas. We look at what Parashara said, and Parashara gives us that Tapasvi Yoga, and Jaimini also repeats the same combination.
I'm curious what happens when other planets join that combo. Like I've got that in my D9, but I've got Mercury with it, and Yama's got it too in her D9, but she has Mars with it. So how does that color?
How's that color, the Tapasvi Yoga? So you have it with Mercury.
Yeah.
And she has it with Mars. So, you know, there's a businessman getting added into there. And let's just break down the yoga. So if it's Saturn, Venus, and Ketu in trine makes a Tapasvi. And Tapasvi means somebody who does spiritual practice, somebody who's doing tapasya. And if Saturn is not there, then the person, the yoga says the person is in is is a is they're wearing monk's clothing only, meaning they're not like a spiritual person. It's only the clothes. So that Venus is showing us that they're wearing the clothing of a renunciate. Saturn means they're actually doing the practices. They're doing the hard work of a renunciate. So now if we throw Mercury in there, we just threw some business element in there. We just threw some element of making money off of tapasya. Doing tapasya for money, or doing tapasya as a business, or doing, you know, something of that nature. We could also say somebody who writes about tapasya. Right? That we throw Mars in there, it's going to depend on which house it is.
For me, it's the first house. Saturn, Mars. Saturn retrograde in Aquarius with Mars ascendant. It's ascendant house.
You're talking
you
about
know what your... Sanjay said? Sanjay said it shows tapas, like you'll stand on one leg until you get until you accomplish it. You will have the tenacity for that.
Yeah, it's not a complete in your case there's the aspect of Venus and K2 to each other. And hold on, I'm looking at Yama's chart. So in your Navamsha,
we're talking about the Navamsha.
Oh, so there's no Venus in that conjunction in your chart. And
no,
are
Venus,
you saying, Frank,
K2
that there's
and
no
Saturn are entrined, is what he was saying.
Yeah, K2 Venus and yeah, I would. It's a very different combination without Venus there.
What do you mean? What do you mean? There's a trine, the trinal relationship. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. But in your I'm looking at the D10. Sorry, it's left over from my last reading. All right. So Mars Saturn. Okay, there it is. I was like, I wasn't seeing it because I was looking at the D10 at the bottom here. So you have a, were you born?
He was saying that we both have that in our Navamshas.
Yeah, yeah.
And his Saturn's conjunct Mercury and mine's conjunct Mars.
Yeah, and yours is conjunct a Yama Yoga. That's this Yama combination. That's the graveyard combination. Were you born near a graveyard?
I have no idea what the hospital was like.
That's a combination for
What's the Yama combination? The graveyard combination?
Saturn and Mars conjunct. And it's in primarily in Capricorn, secondarily in Aquarius.
You could say I was, because the family wasn't alive for me.
Oh, we're not going to take it.
No, that. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying it was very unresourceful, yeah, and very unresonant for me. And I was born into the Saturn Dasha.
Oh, wow.
Saturn Venus I was born into.
In both situations, it takes away from the yoga and turns it into something slightly different.
What does it turn it into?
I mean, in her case, it's going to be, because that Saturn and Mars are going to be giving prominent results, because it's two planets in a trine verse one. And when we look at Frank's chart, let's see. When we look at Frank's chart, you know, it almost turns into a bandhana. He's got that K2 Saturn in the ninth and Mercury Venus in the fifth. So it becomes this 5-9 bandhana in his Navamsha. And he gets to be stuck between, do I do this or do I do that? And we have Mercury Venus on one side that's all creative and teaching and things of that nature. And then we have this spiritual combination on the other side. And, you know, he's torn between two worlds there. So it's becoming a very different type of yoga. But when we go to the root, you know, let's go back to the yoga, because I want you to, it's important that when we look at these yogas, one of the things that the yogas do is they're just ways that Parashar is teaching us. You know, even when they list the typography, the topographies, you know, it doesn't tell us to use it for personalities, but we do. When we look at the Tapasvi Yoga, it gives us a concept of Venus, it gives us a concept of Saturn, it gives us a concept of Venus. You know, it reinforces that Venus is indicating how a person is going to dress and act. So we look at Venus in the Navamsa, and that's giving us a general idea. And we see Frank, he's got that Mercury with his Venus. So he's going to be dressing a little more professional. He's going to be dressing a little bit more that modern, hip, mercurial look. When we look at like this. So when we look at Yama, you know, like her Venus is in its own sign, but it's got that Saturn Mars, that Yama Yoga in a Kendra. So there's going to be a little bit more, you know, even though Venus is in its own sign, it wants to dress up all beautiful, that Yama Yoga is completely holding her back from wearing bright colors and looking all nice. She wants to be like, oh, the world's going to end, and so that's, you know, that doesn't matter to me.
That's not true.
So you tell me that you wear bright reds and yellows and rain...
I do.
And new clothing all the time?
New? Well, I buy my clothes secondhand, but they're
secondhand. Venus in Libra is not a second.
I'm extremely clothing oriented.
Yeah. I didn't say you're not clothing oriented. I'm just saying the nature of the clothing. Venus in Libra is brand new, fancy looking stuff.
No, I'm not into fancy. No.
Exactly. It's not fancy.
No, it's more subtle. But I still wear bright colors. I used to not, but I met somebody who influenced me.
All right. So,
I'll wear subdued colors with one bright thing going on.
So our key is Parashara just told us in that little yoga, he gave us a little hint to how to tell what somebody's wearing. Look at their Navamsa Venus.
I have a question about the Navamsa, so maybe I can have a go at it, all right? So in my Navamsa, my Ketu is in the 10th in Scorpio, and Saturn in the 6th in Cancer, and Mars and Mercury in Pisces in the 2nd. So that would be the trine, yeah?
Nope, you need Venus in the trine.
So the fact that Saturn's in that, you have to have Venus, okay, and everybody else except Venus is there, so that's not, but that's some sort of a yoga too, I'm sure, right, with the Saturn and the Mars and Mercury.
Everything's a yoga, but Parashara just gives us certain combinations, and with those combinations, we extract out, like, the theory. You know,
so could we extract out, for example, just looking at this, and this is just totally off the top of my head.
But right? Remember, when we look at clothing, what we're looking at is Venus. Because the yoga goes. Let's make sure we all understand the yoga. And actually, let me pull it out. I'm going to pull out my... Hey Frank, do you remember off the top of your head where that which verse that is?
What are you referencing?
The yoga that I've been referring to.
Tapasvi?
Yeah. Come on, Frank. Tapasvi. We want the exact one. It's first adhyaya of Jaimini. I just want to read it to get the exact. But no, I'll go from memory. Can you take did I just find it? No. Can you look for that, Frank, while I
I'll look it up. Hang on.
Second from Swamsha. Swamsha combinations. 1, 2. Venus. Okay, here it is. It's 1, 2, 32. or 1233. Venus aspecting / conjunct and or trine gives asceticism and religious leanings. May be initiated into a religious order. That's not the Tapasvi Yoga. I thought I found it. Oh, there, here it is. Saturn, Venus, Ketu in Swamsha / trines indicates a Tapasvi. Saturn alone aspecting Ketu, native is a fraud in garb of sannyasi. So, so Venus needs to be included in order for the person to be a real sannyasi. I found it pretty fast too.
So in my Navamsa, yes. Right, I have Ketu in the 10th house,
mm-hmm.
and Saturn in the 6th house.
Yep.
So Ketu in the 10th, which is career, in Scorpio.
In Navamsa, it's not
Saturn
career.
In Cancer in the 6th, and Mars and Mercury in the 2nd aspecting, so in that trine.
Yeah, but in Ketu...
So that would make me a fraud who is quite militant about it and write about it or communicate. Write a book about it or something.
So, to be a fraud or to reveal your fraudness?
So,
by publishing a book
as a fraud.
So the thing is.
Or to tell that you are a fraud.
Like Kumare, you know how I'm talking about that Kumare?
So in order for you to be the fraud, you would want that in 1, 5, or 9 or from the Navamsa Lagna or the Atmakarika?
1, 5, I have it, yeah.
And no, so you no. don't have, you don't have the fraud combination. But if you were born 30 minutes later, you would. You got that difference? So it's not just a matter of having it there. It has to be in trines from Navamsa Lagna or trines from Atmakarika.
Jupiter.
And it's not in trine.
Yeah. And Jupiter is in the 8th. And Jupiter is the lord of my 10th house in my Rashi, in my Lagna chart, in my Rashi chart.
Yes, but...
And then I have 2 in the 10th house, both in Navamsa and Asamsa, Ketu in the 10th. So, like, withdrawal from, or change, or career, or... I don't know, something with
the big
Ketu
thing,
and career,
the big,
obviously, because
no,
it's in the
no,
10th
no.
house in Aries and in Scorpio, both ruled by Mars. And Mars is exalted in the Rashi.
Yeah, the
and
big, Ketu the big
has
thing is,
that relationship to Mars.
Okay, so
right.
Hold on a minute, you guys. You're going off on a tangent and it's the wrong direction. So you're interpreting the 10th house incorrectly. So the 10th house is career in the Rashi. In the Navamsa, the 10th house is not career. In the 10th house, the 10th house in the Navamsa is your ease of making money. The 10th house in the Dashamsa is the company that you either own or work for. So we got to be very careful. You got to use the significations of that Varga when you look at those houses. So what Ketu does in the 10th house of the D9 is it shows that money can come really quickly and it can disappear really quickly. And so that's what Ketu's doing in the 10th house. It's not affecting career, it's affecting finances.
Can you say what all the houses in the Navamsa mean?
There's which chapter is that? There's a page in the Varga chapter.
Okay.
That goes all into that.
But in the Navamsa freedom, like also it can indicate that, but could it indicate like how does the spouse correlate to that? So would you read it as also the spouse like business ventures with the spouse could cause up and down with money, or the spouse has the propensity to have money come and go. And once you're with them, then it affects you in that way.
We're going off on a tangent.
My question? How does
yes. And I'm going to answer
it one way. How would you look at it from?
So I'm going to answer this, and then we're going to come back because we're really going off on a tangent from where we were working.
Okay.
But so yes, it's the whole chart of spouse, but we can read the Navamsha as a spouse chart. We can also read it as an internal nature chart. And if we're reading it as an internal nature chart, the 10th house is your financial flow. And your bhagya, your luck with money. You know, the fact that Ketu's there shows that there's this luck that makes it just disappear after it comes in. When we start talking about spouse, we're reading the chart upside down, and we're reading it from the seventh house. So here, you know, if we're talking about spouse, that's the fourth house from the first one.
Right.
So from the first spouse, their fourth house, they're either from a foreign place, or they feel foreign to where they live, or there's some K2 element to that, their nature. From the seventh house, we can read it as the natural significations of the D1.
I see.
You got it. So it's all about what we read from where and what the meaning we make of it.
Okay.
All right. So.
Thank you.
But that's only going to be the first spouse. And the big thing is when we look at Upapada, it's spouse that we actually married. When we're in the Navamsha, it's that person that we lived with and we're lovers with for an extended period of time. So that's that first, I mean, for you, that you were married early, so, you know, that seventh house is that first spouse. But then we go to the eighth from it, and the second partner becomes that second house. And then the next partner is becoming eighth from that, which is the ninth house. So that third partner, I mean, look at that. That Venus in Libra, like, pretty cool person. But they have K2 second from it, so they got a little bit of a stutter. Then we go eighth from there. That next partner, exalted son. Wow, they're a bit egotistical, you know? And got a full-on control trip. And so we're reading like this. So we can read the natural significations of the house from the partner. But for you, reading from the Lagna, there's a whole different signification.
Right.
All right. So now let's go back to the tangent. So when we're looking at these yogas, the yogas are sprinkling certain concepts in there. So when, you know, Parashara doesn't sit down and just give us a list. Oh, for this, look here. For this, look here. For that, look over there. He doesn't do that. What he does is he gives us different yogas. If this is here, this is the combination. If this is there, this is the combination. He says if Venus and Moon are in the fourth house from Swamsha, then the person lives in a mansion. Now, we can take from that Venus, Moon, what does it mean for somebody to live in a mansion? Means they got lots of money. Means they're wealthy. So all of a sudden,
I'd like to spend it too.
So all of a sudden, Venus Moon becomes this prosperity yoga that we can use in other places. If you have Venus Moon in the 11th house, wow, you're going to be making lots of money. He doesn't say that Venus Moon in the 11th makes us lots of money, but because that one place, he tells us that gives a mansion, where, you know, Mars gives us a brick house. Okay, Mars is giving a brick house, Venus Moon is giving a mansion. We know that Venus Moon together is becoming this prosperity yoga. And then
could you have Venus Moon together and be in a mansion as an indentured servant? Would that also be indicated in that yoga?
That would definitely be a very weak Venus Moon, but yes, I would say
that could
so.
Be,
Yes. Yes. That would be an interesting one to see. I'd love to see a servant living in a big mansion. That would be quite interesting.
You'd love to see the chart of that person.
Yeah, because they're living in a big, they're living in a mansion, right? Venus Moon.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm giving you a real important teaching here of how these yogas enlighten us. And that we just don't memorize some of these yogas that Parashara gives us, but that we're actually getting these deep teachings from the yogas. Right? You follow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a template.
It's a template, exactly. Little template, and more than a template, he's showing us, look, see how this works here? And he's expecting us to get the understanding of how it and why it's working. And so all this went back to, we go back to the place, creating health or ill health. And I go back to the combination for dying from snake bite. And that one, let's see, the Tapasvi was 1236. The dying from snake bite is 1223. And 1223 says, Sun Rahu conjunct in Swamsha. And Swamsha means in the Navamsha Lagna or with Atmakarika. And secondary in trines from. But, you know, indicate death due to snake venom. Now listen to what he says. Then he says in 1224, and this is Jaimini here. He says, if benefits aspect, this will not happen. If the sun and Rahu is joined by a benefic, then the person becomes a doctor handling poisonous drugs and curing venom afflictions. Then he says, 1226, if Saturn is conjunct or aspecting only, a person, okay, no, that's a different yoga there, so we won't go into that. So we got this combination. Sun, Rahu makes person death due to snake venom, where if a benefic is aspecting, they don't die from it. You know, it doesn't happen. But if it's conjunct a benefic, then they become somebody who's curing that. So let's take that into that same concept over into Frank's chart, where he has a benefic conjunct his Tapasvi yoga. So he's not just being a Tapasvi, but he's being somebody who's teaching Tapasvi, who's teaching Tapasya, right? So do you see how we can take that yoga and then apply it over to a different yoga? And we're going to take that same thing with place. So yes, the place is decrepit, but you know, whether somebody's a healer of the place or disturbing the place, or whether that place is messing them up, or whether they're going in and being somebody who's restoring that place, whether they have, you know, somebody's living in a barren, polluted place and they get sick from it, or whether they're living in a barren place and they don't get sick from it, or whether they live in a barren place and they're out there constantly like fixing it and doing something to make it better, or dying from it. You follow that, Maggie, and you're following all the yogas that would change based upon benefic, malefic yeah. aspect, conjunction?
Yeah, I think so. I gotta look at it more, I think.
So Swamsha is considered Atmakarika in the birth chart, or in the Rashi, it's or the...
Karakamsha, Kar in Navamsha.
Okay.
This is all in Navamsha. So Navamsha Lagna or Atmakarika.
Gotcha.
Which is called... What's Atmakarika in Navamsha?
That's the Karakamsha.
Karakamsha, yes. Good. What's the Atmakarika in the Rashi called?
I don't know.
Karakalagna. So, because it's a Charakarika, right?
Yes.
The Charakarika. So it becomes the Karaka Lagna. So if we can take a chart, and I got paroles open right now, she has Jupiter Atmakarika. So from her Karaka Lagna, we read that seventh house Jupiter as Lagna. And we see what her soul's manifesting in her life. And we see Jupiter's with Moon, and it's got Sun, Mercury, Venus second from it. So she wants wealth in this life. Mars is exalted in the fifth house, so she wants to learn all kinds of occult knowledge. Mars gives us occult knowledge, you know, he's that. So like this, we can read what the soul wants and is doing. And on a soul level, look, it's not her that has the Papakartari on it. From the Karaka Lagna, it's her seventh house. So there's a soul, so that seventh house is getting afflicted from the Karaka Lagna. So there's a soul suffering that's happening in the realm of relationship. There's a deep soul suffering in relationship.
I see.
Yeah. So we can yeah, we read from all these what the level means. All right. So we covered anything more we want to do with signs?
Not currently in my brain. I'm sure there's more.
Now think about signs on another. I'm going to give you a whole different depth of looking at the sign. So what does it mean for the fact that for Pisces, Virgo is the Bhadaka? What does it mean for Gemini that Sagittarius is Bhadaka? I'll leave it to... I'm going to throw this into Maggie's court.
Okay, so the Bhadaka is a blockage, uh-huh. A point of blockage, right? So Pisces is the...
Actually, instead of saying point, it's not a point. It's not a point. It's a place. It's a stana, Bhadaka, stana, okay. Right?
And then well, we got a bit. So like the ocean would swamp a garden, or it's not, it won't.
Hey, go ahead, go for it.
I don't know. I mean, those environments maybe can't coexist.
Oh, they can coexist. It's very just one well. Becomes, it becomes a blockage area. It becomes a place that blocks it.
Don't they kind of contradict? I mean, they're the opposites of one another, right?
Not opposites. We're looking
like
at Bhadaka.
Like Pisces is the opposite of Virgo.
Yeah, but no, because you see, we're looking at Bhadaka now. And if we did Aries instead, the Bhadaka is the 11th house, so it's not opposite. So we're
but kind of Mercury and Jupiter are very opposite.
Yeah, but we're looking at Bhadaka, Yama. Follow instructions. And next you can do the Bhadaka from Aries and what that means to Aries, just to be very clear that like we're not looking at opposites. And you know, so I'm bringing this up, and it's not pre-formatted. I'm giving you a way to think about these signs.
Mm-hmm. So, like a garden, a place that a Pisces, someone who has a Pisces lagna, the place that would be an obstacle for them.
You don't have to do place. You can use anything signified by the houses right now. And the
well,
signs.
I'm just thinking of like the organization and the effort required to maintain a garden versus the. The
ocean, reflowing ocean
kind of
wildness,
yeah, and just
that's what
yeah,
I meant,
like it doesn't, that's what you, I meant you about, can't even really manipulate it.
That's what I meant about Jupiter and Mercury being so different from one another.
So the thing is, organization becomes a blockage to Pisces.
That's exactly what I meant.
Now
yeah,
let's.
That's what I meant, Freedom. I might not have said it clearly.
I know, but opposite's the wrong word. And if you think in opposite,
okay, opposite
then,
was the wrong word.
Yeah. So
I was going to use the word contradiction, but I.
Yeah. But even contradiction's wrong. It's Bhadaka.
No,
looking
it's
at
not
the blockage.
Right. Yeah.
So let's go to Capricorn. What is Bhadaka for Capricorn?
Scorpio.
Oh. Exactly. So the Bhadaka. What does that mean about Capricorn? What is becoming this like the natural Capricorn lagna? What is their blockage just by nature?
Well, Capricorn wants to go out in the world, and Scorpio wants to go deep internal.
We're not comparing the two. It doesn't even matter what Capricorn
is. They're different in that way.
Yeah, but what's the?
I don't know the word to use.
The things that are hidden in Scorpio somehow are blocking Capricorn.
Okay, secrets can be. What about rotting waste? Waste disposal. Think about, you know, these industrial areas.
Yeah,
waste disposal is
sense.
Their biggest Bhadaka.
That makes sense.
think about a Capricorn personality. Like, you know, they want everything to be perfect, all their hidden secrets.
So, okay, I have a great example of that freedom. Like, you know, with what happened recently, I have a friend who's, I think, Capricorn sun or Capricorn moon, and she just didn't deal with it. She just didn't. You know, she just was acting like everything was normal and wouldn't go there at all. And in the beginning, I took it really personally. And then when I looked at her chart, I saw that, no, it's just her nature. To deal with aversion and things like death and really, like, dark, heavy subjects, she just can't
deal with it. It's an obstacle to them.
Dealing with it is just to block it out and pretend like everything's normal. And that really helped me to not take it personally. You know, I saw like, oh, okay, this is just her psychological makeup.
What chapter is the book?
Would that be?
In the house chapter.
Hello?
Yep.
Is there a tendency for things to build up for Capricorn then? Like if they're not actively transforming something, then it turns to...
That's what their blockage is, totally. That's what their blockage is.
But it's kind of like superficial. There's a superficial.
Right.
So we're trying to understand the signs, and do you see how we can look at the bodhika from each sign to understand it deeper?
Yeah, that's great.
So we can utilize all these, you know, we look at the trines, we're looking at the kendras, we can look at the bodhikas from it, we can look at all these different things.
Can we do Virgo and Jupiter?
Virgo?
Uh-huh.
So what does Virgo have an issue with? What do Virgos, anybody here in this class of Virgo Lugna?
I do.
You sure you want to do your chart, Yama?
Jupiter is so important to me, and yet it's my bodhika. It's like, oh my God.
And so we're not talking about you. We're just talking about Virgos in general. We're just trying to get like a general concept of each sign and where they get stuck.
Well, Virgo is controlled, and Pisces is wild nature, uncontrolled, no boundaries. Everything's swimming wherever it wants to swim. There's no order. I mean, there's some kind of order, but it's not. There's no fences and boundaries. Like, you know, there's no structured. There is on a subtler level, of course, but it's not. Nobody's managing it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree. Pisces is kind of like dreamy and amorphous and not solid, and Virgo.
Says who?
I mean, that's just my interpretation.
Said who? Who said that? Some Western astrology book.
Is that what they said?
I'm asking you. Says who? Tell me why would Pisces be dreamy?
Well, it's watery. It's like a moksha sign.
It's a moksha sign. Cancer is a moksha sign. Scorpio is a moksha sign. Is Scorpio dreamy?
The tendency to escape. Is that what you mean?
I'm just being really strict on him because I want his law. I don't want him spouting random stuff.
Yeah.
What we say about these signs has to have logic to it.
Yes.
And it has to be based on the rules. We can make you see right here, I'm letting you guys say anything you want, but I need valid reason for what you're saying. Pisces is dreamy because it's the 12th house. It's where you sleep at night.
Duh.
Okay? I was teasing you on that one, but I wanted a good answer.
I don't know if that was a good
answer. So it's dreamy, it's sleepy, okay. You would have been good there. I could have said, okay, it's dreamy because it's when you dream, it's when you lay down and sleep at night.
Yes.
Okay, any which way. But that's a restful dream. That's not like a pipe dream.
Or you could say Scorpio is like fantasy, and that could be an 8th house thing. But how would you correlate like fantasy or, you know,
who says Scorpio's fantasy?
Taboo fantasy. to the eighth house, I guess.
But who says
taboo
who,
or
yeah, who says
imagination and fear? Fear imagines. Scorpio doesn't have
eighth house
real
is in fantasy
proof, and that's and it usually comes from to fear making things up because you aren't you don't have you're not connecting directly.
Let's stay grounded. Let's stay grounded in the chart. Ground it with logic.
So are we still, we're doing Virgo. Pisces and
Virgo. No, not Pisces and Virgo. We're doing Virgo.
What is blocking
Virgo? What's the blockage? What does Virgo get blocked? Where do they get stuck?
When things aren't literal.
Huh?
When things aren't literal.
Cleaning.
Or clear.
When things aren't clear, totally. They get stuck when things aren't clear. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well done. Do they get stuck in relationship? Relationship a difficult place for them?
Yes.
Dual lugnas, they have a difficult time with relationship. What about fixed lugnas? Which area of life do they have difficulty getting stuck with? Vodka.
Okay, yeah, there we go. With change.
Change? What do you mean by change?
With peep.
Fix lugnas.
It's the ninth house.
Difficult time with authority.
Totally difficult time with authority. Someone's trying to tell them to do something their way. They're like, you want me to do it your way? What? You think they want to do something someone else's way? Oh, man, talk about getting them stuck. And they know it's right, but they don't want to do it someone else's way because they're fixed? Oh, yeah. So a deeper way to understand the signs if we start looking at these different things.
Yeah.
Let's throw another one out there. Eighth house. Eighth house is what? What's the eighth house doing to you? Eighth house is your... No, let's do sixth house. Let's do your enemies. So let's stay with Virgo here. What do they where do they start fighting? What's their fight about?
Well, I can say from my experience. I don't know.
I want from logic. Go ahead,
Frank. As you can hear me, but yeah, so if we're looking at the Bhadaka from the sixth, it would be the second house, so how somebody says something?
Forget about Bhadaka, we're just looking at sixth house energy now.
Okay.
For Virgo, what is this inimical area?
Maybe something about containment.
About containment. Okay.
Containment.
Possible. They don't want to be contained. They don't want to be limited. What else?
They don't want to do what everyone else is doing.
Okay, because it's a sign that's, you know, that it's a little, it's the different sign, right? It's Rahu's like, so they want to be different. They don't want to conform. And people that aren't conforming, they fight about that.
Like Saturn's very structure oriented.
So people that are trying to structure them, they get into fights with?
I mean, Virgos are structure oriented too in their own way, but.
They're averse to change or like sudden change because Aquarius is in the sixth house, which rules sudden changes.
Awesome. So now let's look. The house of healing is the fourth house. So what brings them? What makes them feel at home? What nourishes them?
Foreign travel,
goals.
Foreign knowledge, cultures.
Why are you saying foreign?
Because
We're fourth house now. From fourth house from Virgo.
Because it's Sag.
We don't want to go far in there.
Okay.
Travel is one thing, but not far. It's, you know, it's just yatras. That's just trips. That could also be a trip to the local temple.
Okay.
Well, it's the dual fire that had to do with, like, weapons and protection and the courtroom. So maybe they're nourished by law.
Law and order. They feel good. Law and order makes them feel nice and safe, huh?
That makes sense.
So we got somebody who law and order is making feel good.
Order.
What about Gemini? What's
Dharma? Truth in terms of law, but not other laws. But order. What about that clarity issue?
Gemini, what's nourishing and giving safety and healing and feeling at homeness and to a Gemini?
A garden.
A garden?
Order and cleanliness and purity, a clean home, a well-ordered and clean home, purity in the home.
And we don't even have to say home because it's just a general nature. So organization, cleanliness, all that, that makes them feel safe and secure. So do you see how we can spend years, literally we could go years digging deeper and deeper into understanding each sign and how deep it can go, just based on that, the simple mandala. All right.
So what is 8th house to Virgo, for instance, that's like what, Aries, what would that be indicating? Like new things, like new things are...
No, not new. What's the 8th house represent?
8th house is like, you know, destruction or like what would really bug a Virgo, you know, be the 8th house. I'm just thinking
independence or starting something by themselves, brand new, like something.
8th house. 8th house is destruction. It's not.
Aries in the 8th house. So yeah. Starting something new would they wouldn't. It would be something they would fear, yes, doing something like entrepreneurial or by themselves. Mm-mm. No?
No, mm-mm. Not really.
Okay.
Sorry.
Womp womp.
You're a bit on a roll, though. Good job.
let's go to page 153. Let's see what Parashara says. Or no, that's House Lords. It's page 150. Parashara says, longevity, battle, war, enjoyment of fighting, enemies, deceit, bearing weapons, forts, inheritance, knowledge of past and future, and all things of this like. Enjoyment of fighting, enemies, deceit. It's also your bad habits. And the things that are going to hurt your longevity. So Virgo, what's hurting a Virgo's longevity?
Fighting?
Yeah. A temper.
Temper, anger. What about a Gemini's longevity?
The opposite of nourishing, like dirty.
Dirt, you know, uncleanness, alcohol. selfishness, causing all kinds of problems in their life.
Yeah.
Where if we go instead, if we go from Capricorn, what's hurting their longevity?
Ego.
Ego?
What's the word they're using in the presidential debate? Cavalierism?
Cavalierism.
Or cavalier behavior. Is that accurate? Yeah.
I don't know if cavalier...
And if it's a Pisces Legna, then Libra is in the 8th house, so that would mean relationships hurt their longevity?
Would relationship hurt their longevity, or what
business,
part of...
Business?
Not business. We got to look at, like, what's going to hurt their longevity? Go deeper. What in business or what in relationship would hurt longevity?
Expenditure on expensive fancy things, or I don't know.
Shallow behavior, maybe.
Venus is jealous. Jealousy is gonna hurt
okay.
them. Venus is
vanity.
Vanity, excess sexuality. That vanity where they're spending lots of money, wasting, and they're just, you know, it's, yes. All these are going to be their problems, the vices that are causing them health issues and problems that will guarantee rebirth. And so we can just look at each of these lagnas and we can just understand, like, so much. You just look at someone's lagna and all this is all there. And then planets in it, they just add a little flavor.
Yeah, I was realizing that.
Or a lot of flavor.
The lagna is really, you know, the most important. If you're going to, like, isolate an aspect, the lagna, you know.
So.
And, Chef Freedom, if the lagna chart is our... snapshot, our blueprint, our psychological blueprint, sort of like our kind of fixed karmas or our kind of fixed ways of behaving.
Let's not call it blueprint, let's call it framework. The everything else
framework.
On. Yeah. It's a skeleton.
With the divisional charts, then let me grab it. Where'd it go? The, here it is. The D30 would be our propensity to be able to overcome those that structure, that framework, and then the outcome.
No, not D30. D3 is what is allowing us to overcome these issues.
The siblings. E3 shows us our ability to overcome.
More Jagannath, Drekana. You haven't done the Varga chapter yet, have you?
No.
Yeah, Jagannath, Drekana. That's our ability to overcome the things that are in the chart. When we go to the D9, that's just the karma that we pulled in from last life. When we go to the D30, that's our shadow. That shows where our shadow is. That's our shadow issues. And I'm talking about shadow from the Jungian kind of perspective. The Vedic term is Papa Purusha. Our sin body, our evil nature is in the D30.
Our evil nature.
Yeah.
And then the outcome is the D10.
No, D10 is just what you do for work. Make sure you read the Varga chapter a little more in depth. Which lesson are you on right now?
I don't remember. I think I'm on chapter 7 or 8.
Okay. Yeah, you're getting there. All that stuff is made clear in the Varga section. So let's see. I want to do one more just so we understand a little bit more. Let's look at the third houses. What's the third house tell us?
Nonverbal communication, younger siblings.
What about willpower. Their nature? Willpower. How aggressive or not aggressive they are, right? If there's malefics there, they're aggressive. If there's benefics, they're really soft and easy. But let's forget, what is the natural tendency of a sign without a planet placed there? So if we look from Aries, the natural tendency of Aries, how aggressive is Aries?
Very.
Is it? Look at the third house. They're into negotiating.
That was a trick question.
but that's the thing. We want to look at the third house. The third house from Aries is Gemini. They'll talk first. They'll only fight you if talking doesn't work. Mm-hmm. The sun is exalted there because it's good politics. It negotiates first. It doesn't just go straight to war. That's not Aries. What if we go to Taurus, just that natural aggressive or passive nature, what do we see? In how they get things. Passive, very kind, very gentle. They care about what the other person is feeling and wants, right? With that moon there.
Would you say receptive would be a good word for that, for Taurus?
They're empathic. They're caring about what the other person wants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Lagna.
Yeah, the Lagna. So what about Gemini Lagna?
And then the Taurus, third house would be because Taurus, if Taurus is in a third house, it would be lazy, right? Because Taurus's willpower is quite indulgent.
We're looking at
lazy.
They're definitely a little more lazy and laid back, but they're gentler because of that Cancer.
They don't have like really strong willpower, don't get things done efficiently.
How aggressive or passive they are in getting their things done. Let's look at Gemini. How aggressive or passive are they?
Not passive.
Not passive, huh?
More assertive.
Totally more assertive. Definitely more assertive. And they can be a little controlling, huh? I want it. Give it to me. I deserve it.
Using their ego and their willpower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't throw ego in there. It's just straight. It's more how is the sun going to grab something? It grabs it because I think I own it. Ego there, but give it to me, I deserve it.
Entitled.
So somebody's entitled, yes. So Gemini is
somebody building a house?
All right. And so then let's do let's do Cancer. How passive or aggressive in getting what they want is Cancer by nature?
I'd say they're assertive.
They're friendly.
Negotiable.
They negotiate. They're friendly.
But they get things done.
Let's follow the rules. Let's look at that. Third from it is Virgo.
Virgo, right.
So they're the negotiators. It's very mercurial. Leo. How passive or aggressive do they chase after things, by natural template?
This one's a little more confusing for me.
Why? What's in the third?
Libra.
Libra. Who rules Libra?
Venus.
How's Venus? Is it benefic or malefic?
It's benefic.
It's benefic. So they're nice. They're, it's very diplomatic. Venus is the diplomat. Very diplomatic in how they go about getting things.
Yeah.
But Freedom, when I said, I think Mercury gets a lot done.
Isn't that true? What I didn't mean aggressive. I just meant assertive.
Yeah, assertive. It's a friendly planet. It's negotiating. It's
friendly, but they also
person.
Get a lot done. They're not like socially.
But that's
lung, know,
though. That's
or ungrounded. That's they get things done.
Mercury
Even,
gets
I mean,
things done.
To me, that's interesting because Cancer is. You don't think of Cancer that way, yet the third house of Cancer is that way. And I know somebody who's, she's amazing.
But that's not what we're looking for.
That way.
That's not what we're looking at the third house from. That's the Lugna quality.
No,
so Virgo Lugna gets things done.
I am focusing on the third house, and I'm saying it's so different than the Lugna.
It's giving us how they are getting things done, not how much they're getting done.
Okay,
how much they get done is based upon Lugna and that nature. That how they go about it is the third house.
Okay.
How they're holding the thing that they're doing. Let's see. And then Virgo. Let's finish with Virgo. How's Virgo go about things?
Dictatorially.
What's that mean?
Like
dictator? Well, no, that would be more of a Gemini. With
okay.
There's a lot of noise on the line.
Yeah. I was gonna say internally. There's a lot of. There's more of an internal direction.
It's
so it
Mars.
May be quiet, it
it's,
may be solo.
It's Mars. What's
maybe
Mars
hidden.
Gonna give us?
Aggression.
Forceful.
Force.
Very forceful. It forces what it wants. It's Mars. By nature, Virgo is very forceful. And if it doesn't get what it wants, it goes about it secretly behind your back. Because of that Scorpio. Maybe let's do one more. No, we're good. So we covered the houses, and so you see that we can keep going deeper and deeper. We can keep based on the house, and each sign has this whole framework that is underlying, that is creating a template, and then planets plop on top, altering that. But there's this root framework happening here. All right. So, and we can even look like how they are in relationship, what they think about relationship. What do they think about kids? What's each Lugna feel about children? What's each Lugna think about school? What's each Lugna, how's each Lugna deal with their feelings? How's each Lugna think about money? How's each Lugna, how do they like to sleep? Like, how well do they sleep? Like, what's the natural, so we can develop all this whole concept just by looking at the signs.
Yeah.
And then whether they're dual, not dual, and we can bring in aspects, Rashi aspects, like which houses are aspecting that Lugna and which ones aren't aspecting that Lugna. Like if we look when we're for a Gemini, the Kendra are all giving Rashi Drishti to it. Where if we pop over to a Cancer, for Cancer, the second house doesn't have Drishti on it. The third house doesn't have Drishti on it. The fourth house doesn't have Drishti on it. Not till the fifth house does it get a Drishti. So what does that mean about the nature of a Cancer and what they're interacting with in their life and what's influencing them the most in their life?
Children
are, you see, that's the first aspect going around that is impacting them. So children impacts a Cancer very deeply. Where, you look at the dual signs and children become a secondary thing, not the primary thing. So we can understand the signs in this deep level. And I mean, literally you can just meditate for decades on that mandala. All right, is there anything else we need to, huh?
Great. That's just so great. I just appreciate that.
All right, so let's see. Next, where are you right now?
After yogas.
Yogas, and so have we done yogas? We haven't done yogas live. We did yogas last class, and you missed it. Right, Frank? We did yogas last class. Or was that level two? That was last class. So you got to get the
recording. No, we did because I said that I was having trouble with that chapter.
All right, so you got to get the recording get the recording of last class. And what's the chapter after yogas?
Nakshatras.
All right. So I'm going to test you on nakshatras next week.
Okay. That sounds good. I'll be ready.
And I'll be testing you too, Yama, on nakshatras next week.
Okay.
And
I'm working on it.
And maybe Maggie will have something for us to look at if she has time. Otherwise, the nakshatras will probably take up most of the class. Where are you, Parul?
I think I'm on chapter 7 or 8.
Let's see, 7.
I'm quite behind.
Shot Bala, or Strength and Smash.
And we did
strengthen. Yeah, I did Shot Bala already.
All right. And Bhavapada. So, and you haven't done Chapter 9 then?
No, I think that's where I'm on Chapter 9.
All right. So either the next class or the class after, we're going to quiz you on Chapter 9.
Okay.
So be ready. And right. Yama, where are you?
I'm still on nakshatras.
All right, yeah, that's
and
right.
And I haven't
Justin.
Gone back to yogas yet, but I need to finish that.
All right, well, next week it'll be I'm going to be quizzing you and Justin on nakshatras, so be ready there.
Okay, great.
Review that.
Great.
All right. And Dan, if you just stay on the line, I'll talk to you for a minute before I sign off. Everybody else, it was wonderful having class. I'll see you all next week.
Thank you, Freedom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.